Hello, and welcome to WrestleSpective Radio. I'm Jason Mann, and with me, the hardcore legend, Josh Hatchett. How you doing, Josh?
Doing pretty well. I think you had him fooled for a second. I thought maybe Mick Foley himself was going
to
be here.
But, oh, okay. I didn't even think of that. I was just coming up with a good intro for you. I wasn't even trying to fool anybody, but perhaps I did. Sorry,
you
people.
You fooled me. I did a double take.
Yeah. No, Mick Foley is not here, unfortunately. But we're going to talk about some Mick Foley matches, some famous and perhaps infamous, depending on your point of view. And so, Josh, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. I'm looking forward to this show. It's always always fun to look back at some Mick Foley matches. And
sure,
you know, I even got to see a couple that, or got to see one that I had never seen before. So,
well, always good to explore and discover new wrestling.
That's right.
And also, this show, part of our 5 days of Foley series, and we've had a. Had a contest to win a copy of Mick Foley's new book, Countdown to Lockdown, each day. And if you are listening to this on the correct day, which is Thursday, what's the right date? Thursday
21st.
You probably should remember that off the top of it, but Thursday, 21st. October 21st. This is good for 1 day only. And you will, there will be 2 trivia questions asked about Mick Foley during this podcast. And you have to send us the correct answers and email them to us at WrestleSpective@gmail.com. There'll be information on the site indicating exactly what you need to do as well when this podcast is posted. So,
are WrestleSpective employees eligible for these drawings?
They unfortunately are not.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Although you're not really an employee, because it's not like I pay you or anything, so.
That's true.
You know. But anyway, moving on.
I like to think of myself as an employee.
I'm glad you like to think yourself. Should I be glad about that? I don't know.
I don't know
either. Anyway, the first match is Cactus Jack against Max Payne. Or no, excuse me. Cactus Jack teaming with Max Payne,
yes,
and facing the Nasty Boys at Spring Stampede 1994. And this was a time Cactus had been in some main events in 92 and 93. He had a pretty famous match with Sting at Beach Blast 92, kind of put him on the map a little bit as far as, you know, kind of being a legit main eventer. Then had a pretty brutal series of matches with Vader, mm-hmm, in 93. In fact, lost his ear when wrestling Vader in a match in Germany. And he expressed his disappointment that WCW didn't do more to take advantage of that situation and, you know, put some more steam into that feud. And in 94, he kind of transitioned into a tag team with Max Payne, and the Nasty Boys had joined WCW coming from WWF, and Nasties were the heels in this match, and they were tag team champions. And I watched this off of the Greatest Hits and Misses Mick Foley DVD, which in the introduction setting this match up, he mentions the Nasty Boys having a reputation for being sloppy, and they also had quite the reputation for taking advantage of opponents, particularly when they're wrestling jobbers. In fact, I've heard interviews with Max Payne, who hated working with them, and said that this match was the closest that he ever thought a crowd came that it would have accepted one of the men dying, like a Roman gladiator battle.
Yeah, it was a raucous crowd. I don't know if I would have went that far.
But yeah, well, you know, he was there, so.
I guess so, yeah.
Yeah. And go ahead, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm not surprised that the Nasty Boys could be considered sloppy.
No, based on their personal appearance alone.
Yes.
Yes. They didn't show a whole lot of grooming, for example.
Yes,
they did not appear to bathe that often, you know.
Correct.
Maybe not the best hygiene in the world.
Correct.
You know, definitely not the best diet either.
No,
particularly
no.
Knobs, you know.
Yes.
So yeah, not the Cactus and, you know, Max Payne were necessarily
they weren't Adonis's.
No, they were not. More like Adrian Adonis.
Yes, there you go.
Yeah, and actually Max Payne's kind of an interesting guy. He he wrestled in WCW for a couple years, also wrestled in WWF briefly. It seemed like, it was kind of a Foley type a little bit, and, at least in by type, kind of in style, but never really made it big. Actually, he did have some experience in Japan. In fact, he and Benoit were good friends in Japan early in their careers. So, seems like an interesting guy based on what I've, interviews I've heard.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, the match itself, they pair off with Knobs and Foley and Sags and Payne, and trade shots with a pool cue and just kind of basically work in some brawling. It starts off pretty standard, I guess you could say. Kind of moves into eventually Cactus and Sags, do some battle, and they, and then Cactus, punches Knobs on the ground, and Payne punches Sags on the ground, and then, Cactus tosses Knobs, into the ramp, and then I'm amused when, Max Payne uses a snapmare and, and then follows it up with an elbow drop on the floor. I just like the idea of setting up a spot on the floor with a snapmare.
Yes.
It's very, very conventional in this, heated brawl.
In this brawl, yeah.
And, then Cactus and Knobs end up on the ramp, and Knobs, clotheslines Foley into the ring. And then this, we didn't specifically mention that they have the elevated ramp, so the ramp, you can walk onto it and just step right into the ring rather than having to climb into the ring, which I like the ramp. It's something different. You wouldn't want to have it all the time.
Yeah.
But there's creative stuff you can do with the ramp.
I was thinking the exact same thing as I was watching this, where I like, not every time, but I do like the ramp. It kind of adds like an extra prop, to the match. With something like this, so I enjoyed that too. So.
Yeah, now you can't lessons what you can kind of do around the ring, because you can't run around the entire ring, because the ramp blocks part of that. But Knobs and Max Payne make their way to the souvenir stand, which is when they start showing it in the split screen, which. The screen is they're very tiny, so it makes it a little bit hard to see, especially on a small TV or on a computer screen.
The makeshift souvenir stand cracked me up. It was just, I'm pretty sure they weren't able to sell anything to fans.
Probably not. No. Yeah, they just had a souvenir stand kind of randomly out on the floor, kind of in this isolated area, and Knobs ends up dumping a table of souvenirs onto Max. And meanwhile, Foley and Sags are brawling outside of the ring, and Foley bites him. And Knobs throws a trash can onto Payne, and Sags hits Foley with a chair. So,
you know what always cracked me up about hardcore matches is, you mentioned he dumps, the souvenirs onto him. He's dumping the t-shirts and stuff on.
Sure.
It always cracks me up. You have a hardcore match where they're hitting him with trash cans and shovels, and then, you expect... you're dumping t-shirts and dumping out the trash on someone, what's that supposed to do?
Well, it embarrasses
just demeaning them.
Yeah, exactly. It's not physical pain, but it's emotional pain.
Okay.
It all helps you win the match.
All right.
Yeah. Who are you to question the Nasty Boys and their strategy?
I'm not.
So. Yeah. Anyway, they, then they go back to the single screen for a little bit, and Max Payne gets back up. He punches Knobs, and he slams him onto a table of which has merchandise on it, and it completely collapses. When you're under the weight of Brian Knobs, the table's not going to last very long.
No.
And then one of my favorite parts, he tears a T-shirt. Max Payne tears a T-shirt off the wall, and he sticks it right in Knobs' mouth.
Yes.
And I like that. And then eventually, Sags and Foley kind of follow around, make their way to that area, and Sags whips Foley over the guardrail. And I liked the dated Heenanism of this looks like Tonya Harding's dressing area.
Yeah, that's pretty.
I like the Tonya Harding reference. It shows. Hey, it's 1994. We're referencing Tonya Harding. It's all good.
Yes.
Then the Nasties toss Payne into the souvenir wall, knocking it down. So we're done with the souvenirs pretty much. And then Sags grabs a table and he grabs it up, holding it up in the air, and he slams it down on Foley's head repeatedly.
Yeah.
This is kind of where the match like kind of really gets like steps like above your average hardcore match. It gets pretty gruesome, I'd have to say.
Yeah. They were pretty creative in how they used the tables, I will say that.
Yeah. And it wasn't like they were like setting up like a bunch of like spots and they took like forever. I mean, they just kind of used what they had and hit each other and it made sense. You know, there wasn't anything in here where like, oh, what's he doing? Why is he doing that? You know, at all. Like, okay, yeah, he's hitting them with that stuff and it makes good sense. So after hitting Foley repeatedly with the table, Sags carries the table and puts it onto the ramp. Then Foley, he gets a swinging neck breaker on Sags on the ramp near the table. And then another one of my favorites is Cactus grabs the table almost in like a suplex position, and then he falls backward, and then the table ends up landing onto Sags.
Yeah, that was a cool bit. I enjoyed that.
Yeah, and then Foley tries to make the cover, and then Knobs nails him hard in the head out of nowhere with a shovel.
Yeah, he drills
really
him.
Sick. Yeah, yeah. Right, you know, it looks like it was a plastic shovel. So you know, hopefully it did not. I mean, it hurt. Hopefully it hurt not quite as much as like certainly like a metal shovel would.
Or what would happen later.
Yes. And then Knobs, he climbs onto the apron and prepares to hit Cactus with it again, but Payne takes it from him and then nails Knobs repeatedly in the back. But then Knobs is able to fell him with a low blow.
Oh, the low blow.
The low blow, yeah. It's the dreaded equalizer.
Yes, it is.
No man can handle a low blow.
No.
And then Sags tries to pile drive Cactus onto the table, but the table basically immediately collapses and nothing's really done. And Knobs covers Payne, but the refs are kind of preoccupied with Sags and Cactus Jack, which sort of, I don't know why they had two refs if they're both gonna, one's not gonna follow the other guys, but whatever. And this was false count anywhere, by the way, which is why they're doing pins on the floor. I guess we didn't specifically mention that. But we trust our audience to figure things out.
Yes. Smart,
so. And then the sickest thing is Sags just basically casually shoves Foley off the apron, and Foley lands back first onto the floor.
Yeah, that couldn't have felt good.
No. I believe that's what that's what he calls the nasty plunge, where Foley he usually takes it from the apron to the floor, but since he was on the on the ramp, but essentially the same sort of bump, actually probably higher because the ramp kind of elevated up a little bit. The crack WCW production crew shot it where it was kind of in the background, so you didn't really you didn't really see it unless you were really paying attention. Although they immediately at least kind of put over the gravity of it a little bit, although Tony Schiavone gets in the line that he like wants to see like it go on and see like how long they can go while Heenan, the humanitarian, wants it to end because, they're actually really hurting each other.
Exactly.
And then follow that up, Knobs tosses a shovel over at Cactus, who's on the floor. And then Sags goes on the floor, wallops him in the head with a shovel one more time, even harder than Knobs did him before. And then finally, Sags ends up getting the three count.
Yeah, he definitely drove him in the head with that.
Yeah. And Payne had also, you saw Payne having Knobs sort of pinned at the same time, although I'm not sure he would have gotten the three count. And I'm not sure if that really played into anything, but.
One thing I did like about this was, even though the finish was a little gruesome, they didn't really rely specifically on finishing moves. They just did like a true hardcore ending where they hit someone with a shovel and toss the guy off the stage. Instead of setting up this sequence where they have to use the finishing moves,
right?
To pin Cactus.
Yeah, I mean it was like just this. it was a good intense battle. Mm-hmm. It made sense. Afterward, Sags to add insult to injury just nails Max with the table out of nowhere. So the Nasty Boys beat him up pretty good here, and this would build to a rematch at Slamboree. Which was, but it was, instead of it being Cactus and Max Payne, it was Cactus and Kevin Sullivan. And I think Cactus was like a late replacement for Dave Sullivan, who was really terrible. So it was good to have Cactus and Kevin Sullivan in that match. And that match in Philadelphia is actually regarded, I think, as an even better match than this one. Possibly more brutal. So, but this one's great. It's, you know, it's a really good, I mean, and I think, you know, maybe in 2010 eyes, it may not seem as great as it would have in 1994, just because, you know, this style of wrestling had not been exposed to a very big audience. I mean, you know, it was, you know, ECW was kind of in its infancy and was, mm-hmm. you know, doing some of this, but, you know, it certainly wasn't, you know, you didn't see anything in WCW or certainly not WWF yeah. anywhere near this. So it was, you know, I guess WCW, you know, some of the Vader Cactus stuff kind of approached this territory, but there's just, you know, a huge amount of mayhem here. Yeah. Just, you know, yeah. a huge sense of, you know, craziness and, you know, and just so much going on. But it was a little too much for the cameras to follow, but you mean... They basically got the important stuff anyway.
Yeah, yeah, it was very entertaining to watch. I you know, quick 10-minute match, but they did a lot in that, and
yeah.
you know, didn't take long to set things up, and just, you know, quickly, you know, had a good match.
So. Right, definitely. The next match, I was not quite as great. Well, you know what? We should do first. We should do a trivia question first.
Okay.
Before trivia we go to the next is. Match, so trivia it is. First trivia question is: who trained Mick Foley? Simple enough. He was a professional wrestler. He trained Mick Foley. Who was it? All right. That's pretty dramatic, wasn't it?
Straightforward, yeah.
Yeah, straightforward. Okay. The second one, we'll have a little bit more fun with that one.
Okay.
All right. The match is Cactus Jack and Raven against Terry Funk and Tommy Dreamer from November to November 1995. Cactus and Raven are the heels,
mm-hmm.
and Terry Funk and Tommy Dreamer. Baby faces, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And just before this, Foley and Funk had sort of an infamous incident where Foley had accidentally lit, he thought he had lit Terry Funk on fire. He actually lit a piece of clothing that was on Terry Funk, either a shirt or maybe a towel, had lit that on fire. So Funk was not, he was still burned, but he was not nearly as bad as it appeared at first. He actually broke character to try to help him. And Funk was extremely angry about the situation, although they cooled down, and, you know, and Foley even said that he considered retirement briefly until Funk called him and they, you know, patched things up relatively quickly. But the idea basically, you know, kind of, you know, Foley, you know, Cactus Jack is a madman. He tried to hurt Terry Funk and Raven and Dreamer. This was, I know, in the early stages of their longtime feud. I'm not yeah. exactly sure what.
Long feud.
I wasn't watching a whole lot of, I haven't seen a whole lot of ECW from this era. So, I don't know all the particulars of that, but, anyway, the, I like the beginning where basically, Cactus and Raven, like, Cactus demands that, Funk and Dreamer are in the ring and Cactus and Raven are on the floor, and Cactus demands that Terry Funk come down on the floor to fight him. So the babyfaces go down to the floor, and then Raven and Cactus hit the ring. And then as the babyfaces try to get into the ring, the heels keep knocking them off the apron.
Mm-hmm.
So then Dreamer and Funk put their heads together and strategize. And the babyfaces end up charging into the ring. It seemed like they should have maybe like thought of a more creative solution other than just like, okay, we'll just run really fast and get into the ring and that'll work. Yeah. But whatever. It's at this point that I noticed that Foley has a Dungeon of Doom, makeshift Dungeon of Doom t-shirt that has John Tenta, who was, I believe, Avalanche or Shark at that point, and Kamala and the Zodiac, also known as Bruce Beefcake, on it. So I enjoyed that.
That's a shirt everyone should have.
Yeah. If that t-shirt exists somewhere and someone, wants to buy it for me, I would, or, you know, if it's cheap enough that I'm willing to pay for it myself, I would, I'd be into that. Or both of us, you know, we could have matching Dungeon of Doom t-shirts, maybe for Halloween.
Yeah, that'd be sweet.
Yeah. We should all dress up as our favorite Dungeon of Doom character for Halloween.
I would definitely go as Avalanche.
Okay. I'd probably go as Kamala.
Okay.
Yeah.
Maybe Seth could go as Zodiac.
There you go. Yeah. That would be pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Seth maybe would not be that cool. It might not actually be cool. Maybe our kids could dress up as Dungeon of Doom characters.
There you go.
That would at least be cute, you know. We take pictures of that.
Yes.
I'm sure that our wives will definitely let us do that. Anyway, So Dreamer and Raven and Funk and Foley pair up. And then Foley and Funk go outside, and Funk kind of slaps him, nails him with a chair, and then he tosses the chair into the ring and hits Raven, which I always enjoyed. I always enjoyed Funk tossing a chair. He was always pretty good at that.
Yeah.
Then Funk brings in a random trash can of weapons, dumping them on the ground, and he nails Raven with a speed limit sign, and then hits Foley, and Dreamer gets a low blow on Foley. And then Funk and Dreamer combine to put Stevie Richards, who was accompanying Raven, part of his nest, and put him in a shopping cart and then slammed him legs first, sort of crotch first in the post. I don't know, I'm not sure his crotch actually hits the post, but, you know, given the speed in which he's moving and given the, you know, it probably would still hurt that.
Yes.
Area. Yeah. Then there's more weapon shots inside the ring. Kind of, you know, Dreamer hits Raven with a VCR. Funk gets folded with a shovel, and then not sure why, but then Funk beats up the ref for some reason,
which basically knocks out
the ref for the most of the match actually, and then he nails Raven in the balls with a golf club, and then the heels end up using a chain to double clothesline Dreamer off the ropes. So this time I noticed that Raven's already pretty bloody, and Then Foley works over Funk's arm, and Raven DDTs Dreamer, and they all head outside, and Raven tosses Dreamer into the rail, and then they immediately go back in, and then Foley stomps on Funk, and then he stabs him with something in his arm, which I couldn't really see much of. And then one thing that I thought was pretty clever is that they're back in the ring, and then Raven and Foley try to clothesline Dreamer with the chain as they had before. Mm-hmm. But this time, Dreamer jumps forward onto the chain, and then it forces the two heels who are holding the chain to collide. And I am 99.9% sure that this is the only time that Dreamer's ever outsmarted someone.
Well, he did outsmart Dixie Carter, didn't he? Yeah, to get the...
Ah.
That might be the only other
time. There you go. That's two times.
So.
Very, very smart. Very good. At this point, Dreamer hits another DDT on Raven, but and then Foley nails him with a chair. And then Foley nails the Dungeon of Doom t-shirt around Dreamer's head. And then he's revealing that he's wearing a Forgive Me, Uncle Eric shirt. And then it has a big a caricature of Bischoff on the front.
Another must-have t-shirt.
Another must-have t-shirt, yes. And this is actually used, interestingly, because Dreamer pulls the shirt up to the area where Eric's face covers Foley's face. And then he nails it with the chair and, you know, basically, you know, punches it a bunch. And he's cathartically beating up Eric Bischoff.
Yes.
And I in hindsight, this is stuff that's kind of sad and pathetic. Just that, you know, I mean, I know the ECW fans dug this, and I know it was created for its time, but it's kind of like, it's like, I don't know, just really dumb.
Yeah, it does come across pretty lame.
Yeah, it's just kind of pathetic. I don't know. Maybe if I had been into it at the time, I totally would have a different perspective, and yeah, I can concede that, but I'm looking through the 2010 eyes, and I just don't see it.
Yeah, it definitely comes across a little amateurish.
Yes. Anyway, the Funk drops a shopping cart onto Raven outside, and then Foley headbutts Funk and DDTs him onto the chair, and he covers, but there's no referee because this is like 7 minutes after the referee's been knocked out. So I don't know what, you know, who was in charge of getting the replacement referee, but they did not do a very good job here.
No.
And then Raven follows with possibly the least athletic plancha on Dreamer that I've ever seen in my entire lifetime.
Yeah.
it was not good. He basically, like, instead of, like, doing, like, any kind of dive, he just basically, like, pulled himself up and then just, like, jumped. Yeah, just basically fell feet first onto him. Raven not so graceful there. Then we have Raven, he pins Funk, and then Foley just decides, yeah, I'll make the count myself, which
did he have a ref t-shirt underneath the Bischoff?
He did not. Yeah. He did not have one. Unfortunately, that probably would have been good, but, they weren't clever enough to think of that. Then Foley nails Dreamer outside with some sort of object. And then Fonzie comes in, who the troubleshooting heel referee, who has a bandage on his head, and he makes a count on Terry Funk, but he only gets two. And I believe Fonzie's been involved in some sort of match earlier in the show. Then Taz runs in. He has a referee shirt on because he guest refereed earlier. And then he starts punching Terry Funk, which I'm pretty sure a referee's not supposed to punch a wrestler in the match. But that's okay. And it's the ECW. You know, there aren't – it's extreme. That's extreme for referees to punch wrestlers. And he almost counts – he covers Terry Funk and almost is able to count the pin for himself over Terry Funk. I don't know who would have won in that. I assume Taz would have won in that instance. But Tommy Dreamer stops it. And Raven knees Dreamer from behind. And then just suddenly Fonzie and Taz like, oh, we'll just leave the ring. And we're not involved in this anymore. It wasn't like they were like anyone even beat him up. It was just like, oh, we're just going to go now.
Yeah, we're going to try and then we're done.
And then Raven or Dreamer gets a jumping DDT on Raven. It's a second DVT, and then follows with a pile driver, and then Funk, and then Terry Funk covers Raven and gets the three. So it's like, well, like Tommy Dreamer did everything he could to essentially beat Raven, but then Terry Funk just had to get the cover. Yeah. And yeah, it really randomly felt like it was like completely out of nowhere. Like even though I know Dreamer had all those hit all those moves, but it was like, I don't know, there was no build to that finish at all. That was, you know. And, you know, there were definitely some creative spots here. And there's kind of a big post-match. Then Foley continues hitting Dreamer, attacking Dreamer, and then hits his own DDT. A lot of DDTs in this match.
Yes.
But then Dreamer pops right back up and superkicks Stevie Richards. And Dreamer chokes Raven with a chain, and then he gets out. And then he headbutts Dreamer into the groin, the sort of the famous Sting spot where Sting will be staggering and then suddenly he will fall forward and land in somebody's groin. Although in this case, Raven did it intentionally rather than Sting where it's a accidental sort of spot. Mm-hmm. And then kind of Foley and Funk sort of broadside, and that's basically the end of this. So
yeah, this, you know, this match didn't really seem to have a point, you know. They beat the tar out of each other, some random refs came down, then all of a sudden it was over and I'm not really sure what I just watched. So.
No, and it was the main event of the show too. Yeah. So, yeah, I don't. I mean, I'm not the. You know, there was some creative stuff, and it was fine. I mean, it wasn't like it was terrible or anything. No. But it was sort of like, yeah, it didn't seem to. I mean, I'm not sure if it was meant to resolve anything, but it certainly did not. And it was certainly like, yeah, it felt like the stuff came out of nowhere. It didn't really build. You know, anywhere in particular. It was just sort of. Like, it was a match. They did some violent stuff. They did a couple of interesting things. But you know, given the talent that was involved and, you know, the hype that this period gets, I was expecting a little more. But
Yeah, I was too.
But. Yeah. But we didn't get it. And it's okay. You know. Let's move on to trivia question number two.
Did we get another drum roll?
Let's not do the drum roll.
Okay.
Right. Okay. All right. The question is, who are two wrestlers that have forced Mick Foley to submit or say I quit? There are arguably at least four wrestlers that you could pick from, but you only have to name two. So that's all you have to do.
That's not bad.
Yeah. And next is a very famous match.
Yes, it is very famous.
And I know, at least at the time, it was one of your favorite matches. Yes. Or maybe one of your favorite moments, anyway.
Yes, yes. It's definitely not one of my favorite matches, but I enjoy the moment immensely, no matter how many times I watch it.
Okay. So. It is Mankind against The Rock from Monday Night Raw, January 4th, 1999. Mm-hmm. And this famously had been taped beforehand, and WCW during their show spoiled for its audience that Mankind was going to win the world championship on the other show,
and pretty much mocked it.
It says I believe that Tony Schiavone said something about, boy, that'll put butts in the seats, or some sort of silly line like that. And in fact, it may not have put butts in the seats, but it certainly drew many viewers as Raw destroyed Nitro that night on the infamous Kevin Nash, Hulk Hogan finger point of doom.
Yes.
So,
this was definitely a better moment.
This was definitely a better moment, yes. So, now Foley acknowledges in the DVD commentary before the match that the match itself was not very great. And but he says it's obviously one of the great moments of his career, although actually says it's not the greatest moment of his career. He said the greatest moment of his career happened in ECW of all places. But anyway, in the what happened is Triple H, China, Billy Gunn, X-Pac, and Road Dogg, members of D-Generation X, come out in Mick Foley's corner. And Michael Cole doing the commentary for this match as Jim Ross was out with a Bell's palsy attack, says that Mankind has been adopted as their mascot, so to speak. One other regret that Foley mentioned is that he wished that Jim Ross had been there to do commentary, though he said that Michael Cole did a serviceable job, Ross would have done a better job.
Well, yeah, that's obvious.
Yeah. And The Rock was part of the corporation at this point, and accompanying him to the ring were the Big Boss Man, Vince McMahon, Shane McMahon, Ken Shamrock, Kane, and Test. And in retrospect, what weird allies for these guys to have.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
None of that really goes together, does it?
Not at all. No. No. Yeah, here's the thing. I guess I'll get into this before we even talk about the match. Like, this match felt, to me at the time, and especially today, it felt very much like, it wasn't like this was, I mean, it felt like these were things that were moving, like, a story along, rather than, like, something that was, like, being built to. Like, especially at the end with the finish, it felt like it was all part of, like, the big, like, Vince McMahon, Steve Austin storyline, rather than being, like, you know, the Mankind Rock storyline.
Yeah, it's Austin and McMahon steal the spotlight by the end of it. And
yeah,
it's almost, you know, Mankind winning is the afterthought, you know, by the end of this. But
yeah,
you know, and I could see where that would be a regret, where if you don't have all these guys and it's just Mankind and Rock and that's it, then you know, maybe that's a little bit better wrestling moment, where there's aspects of, you know, where Mankind's out with DX, you know, there's kind of a cheesiness factor to some of that, where he comes out with them and it's a little goofy in that sense.
Right.
But
yeah, I think the whole thing, you know, the setup to this was Rock had become a babyface in the fall of '99 after losing the Intercontinental title. And people were clearly really, really behind him. And then they set up the Survivor Series, and they did a big swerve at the end where it turned out Rock was the heel and Mankind was the babyface. I think people did not want to boo the Rock, and I think that turning him heel, like I understand that was the natural match for WrestleMania 15 against Austin. And you know, it's not, I mean, it did fine, so it's not like it was a wrong decision, but like, it just felt like, okay, these are the angles that we've laid out. This is like the way we want to get there. And it just, I think it went against like what the fans' vibe were feeling at the time. It certainly went against the vibe that I was feeling at the time. Maybe I'm just taking it too personally. Maybe it was fine. Maybe it wasn't wrong, but this moment to me was diminished because of a lot of those things.
Okay, well, that's fair enough.
All right. And Rock is wrestling in his warm-up gear.
Wasn't he having some sort of surgery at this time?
Yeah, I think he had some sort of breast involved surgery.
Yes.
If I recall my internet's 1998, 1999 internet gossip correctly.
Yes.
And Foley is pretty much like in a tattered tattered suit shirt, and basically his normal Mankind gear. And it begins with Foley sort of saying something to Vince through the ropes, and then Rock attacks him from behind. Sends him outside, and Shamrock attacks Mick, but then Rock tells him to stop so that he can have Foley all to himself. And he tosses Foley into the ring steps, and then drops the stairs onto his back, and then drops another set of stairs onto the first set of stairs. Well, I guess more component of the stairs, not actually the whole set, but he takes the top off first, then drops the bottom onto the top. And then Rock suplexes Foley onto the floor, and then he steals Cole's headset, which was one of his signature things at the time, and he tries to spit water in Foley's face, but Foley punches him down onto the announce table, and then Foley grabs the headset and then does a very amusing brief JR impersonation. And then but Rock ends up wallowing him with the ring bell.
You know, obviously Foley takes a great amount of punishment in these matches, but you know, Rock really, looking back, I'm impressed at some of the work that he did, you know, because he took a lot of punishment, not in just, the Foley feuds, but everything that he was involved in, you know.
Yeah.
Rock wrestled, fairly hard.
Yeah, he had a physical style, you know, pretty well, and, you know, he had a good pace. I'm not sure, maybe not everything he did looked all that crisp, or, like, you know, and he certainly didn't have, like, the technical ability of, you know, some of the stronger workers, but yeah, I mean, he always gave a good effort, and, you know, his matches were fun, and I mean, it wasn't just like he had great charisma and personality, although that was obviously the biggest part of him. But yeah, in the ring, he could deliver fine, and he had some very, very fantastic matches.
Mm-hmm.
And then after this, Rock chokes him with a cord and sets him up onto the table, and he hits a rock bottom, but actually the landing's kind of bad. He didn't really land on the table. He's more like lands like half on the table, half on the floor. And then they get back to the ring, and then Rock punches out Foley inside, and then he gets a cover for two, and then hits a Russian leg. It's a Russian leg sweep for two, and then he charges into an elbow into the corner, and then Foley hits him with right hands, but then an elbow knocks him down, and then Rock does the corporate elbow, which only gets two.
Yeah, well, that's shocking.
Yeah, and then I always found it like he always, of course, did the people's, then later corporate, then later people's elbow. And I remember, like, of course, that was like basically like the goofy like comedy thing that he would do, and then people got really behind it. I remember being shocked when somebody actually was pinned by it, like, for the first time. I forget what had happened. It would have been, like, think fall of 98, but I'm like, wait a minute, that's the finisher now?
Yeah.
I like that a lot as, like, a goofy, like, fun thing, but as, like, as a finisher, that was never good. The rock bottom was all, at least, you know, believable as something that, you know, you could finish a match with.
Yeah.
of course, Rock went basically from, like, January of 98 to September of 98 and, like, I think he won one match by pinfall during that entire time. So
really,
I think he beat Farouk by pin. At least like a semi clean pinfall. He might have had some other pinfalls where they were like
interference, you know, and stuff.
Yeah, okay. But he didn't have many. That's the point.
Okay.
And yet, you know, managed to get over and, you know, obviously become, you know, one of the biggest stars in wrestling ever. After the corporate elbow, Mankind comes off the ropes, ducks a clothesline, and then hits his swinging neckbreaker. But Boss Man grabs his foot, which distracts the refs while the belt was slipped into the rock. And even though it's no DQ, so I don't really understand having to be behind, doing that. But whatever. The belt shot gets two, and then Foley ducks another attempt at a belt shot, and then hits a DDT for two. And then Mr. Socko comes out, and Foley hits the mandible claw. But then Shamrock runs in and hits Foley with a chair, and then Billy Gunn chases after him because Shamrock and Billy Gunn were involved in a scintillating feud that ended up killing an awesome Ken Shamrock character.
Yes.
Then basically everyone brawls on the outside, and then the glass breaks. Stone Cold Steve Austin's music, and the crowd does go absolutely insane.
That's one of the best reactions ever.
There is no doubt that is just a huge, 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 just massive pop.
Yeah.
And, I mean, even bigger than Austin's normal huge pop. He'd been off TV for a few weeks, too, because he got, I think he got hurt during the Buried Alive December Rock Bottom pay-per-view match, which was a horrible match,
by the way. That's an awful match. Awful pay-per-view.
Yeah. Buried Alive, by the way, which there's going to be a Buried Alive match coming up, I guess, Sunday at Bragging Rights. Ugh. Those are always bad, so...
And now you have however old Undertaker against however old Kane.
It's going to be really awful. I'm not expecting...
It's going to be terrible.
Not expecting a whole lot from it, but...
But anyway, that was a crazy reaction.
Yeah, that was insane.
So I could watch that match just for that reaction.
Yeah.
It's just awesome.
It's a great moment, no question. And then, he hits Rock with the chair and then drags Mankind over on top of him. And then, of course, everyone's fighting outside. I would thought they would have heard the music and maybe somebody from the corporation would have slipped in and tried to stop it, but...
Hey, why is everyone going bonkers?
Yeah, what's going on? It's crazy.
Man, they're really behind the rock all
of a sudden. Oh, yeah. And then Austin, he walks away, and then he goes back, and then he gives Vince McMahon the middle finger salute. And McMahon, who was exasperated, I think that would be fair to say, and complains about it, and then Foley ends up resting... going on DX's shoulders, and then Road Dogg sort of does his spiel, but officially announces Mankind as the new champ. And then Mankind gets the mic and says, "Vince, hey Vince, I got to tell you, this feels pretty damn good." And then he says, at the risk of being uncool, he's going to dedicate it to his kids. And Vince says, "That makes me want to puke," which is a pretty amusing reaction to the whole thing. And then Mankind runs around the ring to celebrate. And, elements of this were awesome. I think there's so much going on. And being, kind of a cog into the Austin McMahon storyline. And, the fact that they, kind of switched the titles, back and forth a bunch of times. And Foley, not that I would expect Foley's character really to need, a long-term run. That really isn't, something that would be right for him. But... at the same time, I don't know. They could have. It just seems like this could have been so much more. And the greatness of aspects of it aside, it just it underwhelmed me for a lot of reasons.
Well, I will say this: I totally agree with you that I wish at some point he would have had a nice extended run or really say what you want about this match. But, he got a lot of, there was a lot of outside help that gave him the match. It would have been nice, for him to have a nice extended run where he beat The Rock, in a great match. Or even, I found myself, wishing, man, I wish he would have beat Triple H one of those epic matches that they had. Maybe just once beat Triple H and then. Had him come back win.
But. Yeah, I agree with that. Although I think also the way that he really put Triple H over and didn't get a win in that feud kind of made Triple H even bigger than he would have been.
Yeah.
But I can see the point of view. I mean, it's not for me. It's not the length of the reign, but it's kind of like what you said. It's like if he just had one where he'd won it on his own and like it would have been like his moment and not anybody else's. Yeah. I mean, it felt like this one. Obviously, there was a lot going on. The second one was that halftime heat, right?
Yeah.
When in that goofy empty arena match where it wasn't like a forklift and something was pressing down on him.
Had a weird camera angle where Rock was looking up.
And, yeah. I mean that was just so silly. And the third one was the triple threat at SummerSlam 99.
Yeah.
And that, that Jesse and Ventura involved as the ref, and the kind of focus was on that somewhat. And it was on, Triple H and Austin and Triple H not winning the title after people kind of expected him to, he was added at the last minute to that match and it didn't really that didn't really feel like his moment either. There's a lot going on that too,
Yeah. Yeah.
I just wish, the fourth run, of course, came in TNA, which I'm planning to watch that match soon. The title win against Sting. I don't know how that came off, but that was it's TNA, which things never really seem to come off great there. And also, he was in the midst of a heel turn when that match happened. So it's sort of it's kind of hard to have a feel good moment when the guy's turning heel.
Yeah.
But.
Like I said, I totally agree. I wish, for me, I wish he would have beat Triple H once, even if it's at the Royal Rumble and, he comes back and does the job the next, two pay-per-views. That's fine with me. But, you know, but still, you know, and obviously, like you said, there's a ton of this involved, you know, a ton of people involved in this. And, you know, it's probably a little over the top. But to me, this was, you know, just everything involved, whether it's the, you know, and I guess it's more than just fully winning the title. It's just the reaction with Austin, you know, Vince McMahon's reaction, you know, Lawler's commentary throughout the whole thing was just hilarious. And, you know, for me, that's still one of my favorite, you know, just moments. It's obviously not the best match, or it doesn't do a great job with the storyline and all that stuff, but it's just a fun moment for me.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it told the story it meant to tell very well. It just didn't tell the story that I would have rather seen.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, whether that's a fair complaint or not, you know, I don't care. It's our podcast. We can complain about whatever we want. But yeah, I mean, it's worth seeing, no question about it. I mean, it's a 10-12 minute thing all together. You know, it's really hot. I mean, it's a very, you know, it's compelling, no question about it. But yeah, it's definitely worth seeing. In review, you should go out of your way to watch the Cactus Max Payne Nasty Boys match.
Definitely.
And you should follow that up with the Cactus Jack Sullivan versus Nasty Boys match as well. Both those matches are relatively quick matches and some great, you know, brutal action, you know, not defending maybe every spot that's in that match in today's eyes, but, you know, some really believable, you know, good action. I think you can pretty much skip the Raven Foley, Dreamer Funk match unless you really want, unless you're just a big fan of that period or just want that as a historical curiosity. And I, you know, despite my reservations, I think you should watch the Foley Rock match you know, for just to see those moments that are, you know, that were, you know, I mean, it was a super important moment in the Monday Night War too. Clearly it was a big deal that, you know, there was another one of those momentum shifts that, you know, led the WWF to even greater heights and WCW into lower depths.
Yep, that's right. I agree with you on all three matches.
All right. Well, good. So I'll just go through the questions one more time in case you skip to the end and decide to be tricky and want to cheat and just get the questions. I'm going to reward your trickiness. And the questions are, again, number one, who trained Mick Foley? And number two, name two wrestlers that have forced Mick Foley to submit or say I quit. And again, this offer is only good on Thursday, October 21st, 2010. And your deadline is 9 p.m. Eastern time. And if you email the answers to those two questions to WrestleSpective@gmail.com, you will be eligible to win a copy of Mick Foley's Countdown to Lockdown book.
That's a pretty good prize.
Yeah, free. Very good prize. It'll be shipped to you for free and everything. So if you're listening to this today and it's before, today is in the day I just said, And you have time to send an email, you'll be on the list and we'll let you know. If not, if that doesn't apply to you, we hope you enjoyed the rest of the podcast, the matches and all that. And as always, you can check us out online at WrestleSpective.com and feel free to email us. Well, we'll give it the email, but we'll just say it again, WrestleSpective@gmail.com. Check us out at facebook.com/WrestleSpective or twitter.com/WrestleSpective. So thanks a lot, and we'll talk to you again.